What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Vermont's pension funds for state employees and teachers have a combined unfunded liability of $5.5 billion. And finding ways to reduce this liability has become a very controversial issue. Well, today on Vermont Edition, we want to take a step back from that political debate and take a look at the different elements of this important issue. We're thinking of today's program as sort of a pension 101. Our goal is to have a better understanding of the key factors responsible for the unfunded liability and to see how lawmakers now hope to move forward with this issue. We're going to be speaking with a number of people today, starting with someone who has studied it very closely in the past few years, and that's State Treasurer Beth Pierce. Treasurer Pierce, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on. And today we're going to try to stay away from financial lingo and all sorts of acronyms and help people understand this issue. You've been state treasurer for more than a decade. You certainly have dealt with many difficult financial issues over the past 10 years. Where does this one rank on the list? Is this one of the toughest?
I would say so. It's painful, to say the least. I wish we had another alternative, but for the future, to have sustainable pensions for this generation, the next generation, and the generation after that, we've got to come to terms with this.
And is it a difficult issue to deal with because you're dealing with benefits that people were relying on?
Well, for me, it's about making the structural changes. There are going to be, if this moves forward with the General Assembly, and I hope it does, there will be some benefit changes. Again, it's painful for the members. It's painful for all of us. And in addition to that, we should talk about revenue sources as well. But I think that some structural changes are absolutely needed.
So help us understand where Vermont is in comparison to other states. Are other states facing the same kind of situation?
Some states are. As a number of states in New England, our pension liabilities and funded percent are lower than the average. And we also have very high OPEB. And OPEB, I know we're not supposed to use lingo. OPEB stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits, which is primarily health care for retirees.
So let's see if we can get a better understanding of the scope of this problem. The unfunded liability is roughly about $3 billion. And then you mentioned the health care costs, which I think account for another $2.5 billion. Is that basically the scope of what we're dealing with?
Yes.
Good. It's good to have a starting point that we can all agree on. So let's look at some of the factors involved, and in no particular order, and just to see what they are without assessing blame necessarily, but just to understand better why this is happening. One would be demographics. We know that Vermont's population is growing older. There's no question about that. So that people receiving benefits now are living longer and will therefore use up more benefits. Is that an important part?
Absolutely. Termination, retirement patterns are definitely a part of this. If I could, since we want to do a 101, perhaps I can go back a little bit and talk about how we do this and how this is measured.
Sure.
Okay. So each year the actuary measures and projects the liabilities. How much is it going to cost for members that are already in the system and their incurred benefits at the time they retire? Let's take a 25-year-old as an example. Let's say that that individual is hired, and the actuary is going to make some projections on what that means in terms of the probability that that member will reach retirement eligibility. It gets complicated because they do probabilities and over different ages and different levels of service. But that's basically what it is. Then the next question is, when will that member retire? And will it be a normal retirement, or will they retire on the early side and still have eligibility? And what is the benefit? And the next thing is, what are their salaries? What was the salary that they had during their work? And how does that, in combination with the years of service, get applied to benefits? The next question is, how long will that member live? And finally, all those questions are aggregated for each member in the system. So the actuary is looking at every single member, putting this into their software, and coming up with the various probabilities for each member. As you might guess, a 25-year-old has a longer term on this. I'm 67, so I will reach retirement at an earlier age, I mean an earlier period. However, I do want to say that I plan to be here for a long time. At this point, what the actuary then does is say, what is the investment return? What's the inflation? What are the other economic factors? And how are those going to impact liabilities? How, you know, we have money in the system. We have $5.4 billion in the pooled investments for the teacher, state, municipal system. What's that investment return assumption over a 30-year period going to look like? Again, you aggregate this up, and that's, you take a look at what those assets are, and then you get to the funded status of a plan. How much do you have in assets versus the liabilities? For the state system, that's about 66.4%, and for the teacher system, that's 51.3%.
Thank you very much for running through that. It gives us a much better understanding of all the factors going into this. So as we mentioned, demographics, people are living longer. People who are getting pensions for a longer period of time. At the same time, the number of state employees has been reduced. The number of teachers has been reduced. So do we have a situation where we have fewer people contributing to a system where more people are taking pensions for a longer period of time?
That's correct. Now, ours is not at the far end of the curve with this. So we do have a declining number of actives to retirees. It's a concern, but it hasn't hit a level that overwhelmingly changes the curve on this.
Another factor that a lot of people focus on is that lawmakers did underfund these pension accounts during some tough economic times. If we look between 1990 and 2006, we can see that the teachers' fund was underfunded in the amount of $160 million, roughly. There were all sorts of budgetary decisions made at that time, ideas of raising revenue, cutting human service programs. They decided to underfund over about a 10 or 15-year period. When you compound what was not put into the system, this starts to add up to real money, doesn't it?
It adds up to a great deal of money. You're missing the value of compound interest, and a good period of that, we were seeing high inflation and high investment rates as a consequence. So you were losing money during a time where you should be making very good gains. And while we started funding this in 2007, the teacher system also had a situation where healthcare, which was part of the retirement system, and was taken out of that system without the needed appropriations. Essentially, the legislature continued to underfund the healthcare, and we calculated in a presentation to the General Assembly back in 2012 that the amount of money, it was $20 million at that point in time, that was not appropriated, will result in about $58 million of payments that would need to be made by taxpayers. And if you compound that each year, that's a problem.
That is a problem. Do we have some sense of, if we look at all the underfunding, we can say of the unfunded liability now, it's responsible for X percent?
I'm not able to give you that number at this point in time. I can certainly take a look at it. It gets a little complicated because you, the next year, you essentially add to the mortgage the amount of money that you're going to need to pay off the unfunded liability by 2038. But we can certainly calculate that. And I do want to point out that while this continued in terms of health care, the legislature did appropriate the necessary dollars in 2014. We're working on some other issues in terms of getting to pre-funding, but that was a start. That saved the taxpayers between 2014 out to 2038. We'll save the taxpayers $480 million.
One other factor to add into the equation is, as you mentioned, the financial returns that these pension funds have gotten. A report from the Institute for Pension Integrity ranked Vermont as one of the top 10 worst performing pension funds in the country. You know, this is an area, I think, of where people really don't understand. I think a lot of folks think that some agency of state government, perhaps even your department, is responsible for making these pension investments, but that's not how it works. Can you talk to why the pension returns were as low as they were?
Well, I've taken a brief look at that report, and that report is comparing them to passive investments index funds, does not take in the diversity that is required in a pension fund. Certainly, you want a diversified portfolio so that you have some downside risk protection, particularly since you're at, you know, 60-some-odd percent and 50-some-odd percent. We would have a real problem if we went into another great recession. The other issue is the timing that you do. It's endpoint sensitive. I've seen some published reports that take the returns from 2008 or 2009 out to 2018. And by doing that, you have the Great Recession in there, and at the same time, you have missed the opportunities that we had in 19 and 20. So it is endpoint sensitive. I will say that we've made a number of improvements. The numbers have definitely improved, and as a result of that, I think we have good 1, 3, 5-year, and 7-year investment performance at this point. We simplified the portfolio. I'm speaking as one member of the 7-member committee. I should give credit to Tom Galanka, who is the chair of VPIC. We simplified the portfolio. We reduced expenditures. We relied on index funds where we can. We got rid of some very complex investments that didn't perform well in very volatile environments. But our 1-year number right now, as of December, the 1-year, 3-year, and 5-year returns are in the top 19% of the country, and our 10-year reflects some of that not taking advantage of the boom period and having more downside risk, and again, some of those complex investments. It was 69%. That said, it was still 7.17%, which is higher than the current assumed rate of return. At this point, we took a look at some March numbers. We do not have rankings at this point in time. It's premature. But our fiscal year-to-date number, and again, that's not an annualized number. It's from July to March 31st. It's 17.21%, which is a very good number, and we think that that will be helpful as we move forward. And certainly our percentages and our will rise. Our 1, 3, 5-year, and 7-year return numbers.
As you know, the legislature has decided to appoint a special task force to look at this issue. This bill, in fact, will be on the House floor this afternoon. Is there a cost of delaying this decision for a year? Can you look at it and say, well, by not coming down and having a decision this year, we are going to add X amount of money to our unfunded liability?
Well, part of it would be the ADEC, the Actuarially Determined Employer Contribution. I'm sorry I did it again with acronyms. but that refers to the amount that has to be appropriated. And this year, in 2022, as a result in the $604 million of increase in liabilities, the formula you do to pay off the mortgage by 2038, it's $96.6 million. And that will increase by 3 to 4.5% from year to year, based on assumptions and based on the size of the payroll. So by delaying it, we've already had a $96.6 million reduction. In addition to that, depending on the proposals that are made, some of the proposals said that everyone that's within 5 years of retirement would not be affected. Others within 2 years. To the extent you do that and change the dynamics over time and who's retired and decisions that people are making, that's likely to increase. That's a concern that we have, that why we're disappointed that this did not get done. We think that it adds cost to the system and adds more need to do these benefits. If we put this off too long, you end up with some very draconian measures. We are disappointed that it didn't happen this year. We are pleased that a task force is being proposed. We have significant concerns about how that is composed, the time frame associated with it, and the charge that's associated with it. I think those will be worked through the House and the Senate. We had a very robust conversation about those elements and equity. How many employees, employer representatives, employee representatives, and how many employer representatives are on the committee. I would recommend folks take a look at the Senate testimony yesterday. It's on YouTube, and I thought it was very robust and helpful to the conversation. But there is a cost to doing, and we recommend that this be done now in the 2023 budget, since it's probably too late to do that.
We've been talking with State Treasurer Beth Pierce. We hope she'll stay with us for a while. And right now, we'd like to discuss this issue with the chairwoman of the House Government Operations Committee. That would be Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland-Hansis. Representative Copeland-Hansis, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me today, Bob.
Representative Copeland-Hansis, your committee had a plan to deal with this enormous unfunded pension liability. And the ink was hardly dry before it came under some pretty sharp criticism from the unions involved. Let me ask you just to start by asking a question that I've been asked by a lot of people. Did you know at that time just how controversial your plan was going to be? Were you surprised by the reaction, or did you expect it?
So I think anytime you talk about making changes to benefits that folks have come to expect, it's a difficult conversation. And I think the extent to which our workforce, our state employees and our teachers really came out and said, whoa, slow down, we can't deal with this right now, really was sort of the biggest takeaway for us on the House committee. We respected that that this is a very difficult time for folks to engage in this conversation, and given that the conversation was happening in the legislative session, I think it really made people feel that they didn't have the opportunity to really weigh in and have a robust dialogue about what benefit changes might be acceptable, what other potential solutions might be considered, and that's why we decided to pull back and say, okay, let's set up a task force. Let's all come to the table. Hopefully, this summer when we can be physically present in the same place, so that we can really understand each other, and let's slow this down, like we've been asked to by our hardworking teachers and state employees.
You know, as you mentioned, the legislature has been operating remotely since the beginning of January because of COVID-19. Do you think that in any way was a factor in people's reaction to this, or they weren't able to discuss it in person, perhaps the way they might have had the legislature been physically present in Montpelier?
Well, what's interesting about that is our remote meeting environment actually gives people much more access to the process. Our every single moment of every day in committee is streamed live and also perpetually filed on YouTube under the House GovOps Committee YouTube channel. And so people can see exactly what's going on. I think the challenge really is that, you know, the legislative session has a timeline to it, and it has a definite, you know, adjournment period in the beginning of May. And I think folks just felt that it was going to be too difficult to come to an understanding about how to move forward under that timeline. I think the other complicating factor that maybe is exacerbated by this remote meeting is that we did not have a common understanding of what the problem is. We had two public hearings in committee, and so many state employees and teachers, you know, came to that public hearing or sent us emails afterward and said, you have created this problem. You, legislature, shouldn't be trying to fix this problem on the backs of state employees. And, you know, the reality of what we have learned in studying this intensely since January is that there are a combination of factors that have brought us to where we are now. Some of it is that historic underfunding. But as you talked about with Treasurer Pierce, some of it is also the underperformance of our investments, and some of it is due to simple demographics. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can set aside the amount of unfunded liability that is due to the historic underfunding, and if you can set aside, you know, what we should have gotten for investment returns, you come back to a very simple math problem, which is, are the dollars paid in by employer and employee plus the future investment returns enough to cover the retirement benefits that we are promising to people? And that simple math equation, I think, is what leads us to need to have the conversation about whether we need to change the contribution rates or whether we need to change benefits, a little bit of both, maybe some a different revenue source to help solve the problem. So that's really the duty of the task force this summer and fall is going to be to understand that math equation.
Let's talk to some of our callers and start with Larry, who's calling from Burlington. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My quick question, if the people who currently have pensions or continue to get their pensions, and they will get it, but all new hires at some point now or in the future are switched to a 401k where the state contributes some amount. How would that affect the future amount or that's owed? And would it kind of put an end date in the future to the unfunded liabilities?
So, Larry, you're talking about changing what the pension understanding would be for new hires.
Right. Protect the people who have pensions, but then at some point switch over to 401k with employer contribution.
Let's get reaction from both of our guests right now. Beth Pierce, what would you think of that idea?
Well, I think that what he's talking about with a 401k is a defined contribution plan. And in a defined contribution plan, the employee puts his or her money into the system. The employer, the state, puts the money in. The individual then invests. And frequently what happens with that is that they are not investment experts. They end up with an amount of money that may or may not be enough for retirement. And you end up with a situation with many, I've seen this in looking at the numbers, that they deplete those dollars. And now we have elderly people that do not have adequate dollars. So one is a concern about retirement savings. It actually costs the state more. To do this, the normal cost, which I won't get into the detail on that unless you want me to, that will be more expensive under a DC plan. It does not eliminate the unfunded liability, and in fact, evidence is that it will grow. The unfunded liability will grow because of the aging of the population, the contributions coming in. There are a number of factors. West Virginia did this in the 90s, what they found was that it affected recruitment, it affected retention, and it had a very high cost associated with it. Now, a number of folks have done plans with DB plans. When I've looked at the data on those, I don't believe on the short term, I don't see that there's a cost savings with that. In fact, it costs more. And I haven't seen evidence that it will save money over the long term.
Representative Copeland-Hansa, what do you think of that idea?
I have to agree with Treasurer Pierce on that. That you know, that would be the last option that I would choose in how to move forward, because it doesn't do anything to save on the unfunded liability, and in fact, it puts future employees, future hires, in a much more precarious position, because they simply won't have the support and savings that they need in retirement.
Today in the program, go ahead, Treasurer Pierce.
Too, it affects women even more, because women live longer, and at the same time, unfortunately, they do not make the same salary as men. So it has a disproportionate impact on women as well.
Representative Copeland-Hansa, I just wanted to ask you sort of a general policy question, and that is what we're hearing from a lot of teachers and state employees, that that one of the reasons they came to work for either in education or for state government is because there was this good benefit package, and it helped offset what they felt were perhaps a lower salary than they might have gotten in the private sector. So in general, do you think a good benefit package encourages people to work for the state or for schools?
I do. I think having a defined benefit pension available to our teachers and our state workforce is an essential recruiting tool and a retention tool. From the many people that I've talked to since we started this discussion earlier on this session, I have been made very aware that is exactly why people come to these jobs and why they stay in them, even though they may not make as much as some of their peers.
Well, we're going to bring another voice into the conversation at this time, and that is Don Tenney, who is the president of the Vermont NEA. Don, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be part of the discussion.
Absolutely. As you know, there's been a task force bill that will be on the House floor this afternoon. Your thoughts about having a task force look at this issue?
Well, we absolutely welcome the legislature's decision to slow down and take a methodical approach to the pensions funding issue. And so we'll continue to fight for a path that does not rely on making teachers pay more, work longer, and get less. So we are looking forward to having our rank and file members on that task force, for they can speak directly from their experience in the classroom and what their colleagues are experiencing.
I know in talking to you, Don, that underfunding has been a big issue for you. But we also have been talking about demographics, fewer employees paying into the system. There are a number of key factors here. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. There have been a number of factors, and the representative and the treasurer have pointed those out. But I think what's important to understand is that teachers have kept up their end of the bargain. Teachers have paid every cent they've been asked to pay for decades. So it seems unfair to us that we try to solve these pension problems on the backs of teachers who have done everything they've been asked to do.
Would you say that there needs to be some balance of responsibility here, that teachers are responsible for part of this?
Well, I think that's the issues that the task force will be wrestling with, right? It's whatever the combination is, we have to be at the table, we have to talk through those and see, you know, what are the alternatives. We maintain that one of the most important things that has to be done is find a new source of revenue. And there doesn't seem to be any reason in our minds why we cannot have the wealthiest Vermonters pay their fair share and return to tax rates which are more reasonable, as we saw decades ago before the Reagan years pushed through these austerity measures.
And Don, could you tell us, what do you think the impact would be on the state's teaching workforce if folks are asked to contribute more and receive less?
Well, we already have heard from a number of our members that the consequences will be terrible. Many folks will take early retirements. Many of them will leave the state and go to other states where there are better benefits. Some folks will simply make a career change to go where they can make more money. I think what's really important here is that we understand that this is difficult, complicated work to figure out. But behind all of these numbers are actual Vermonters whose retirement security will be put at risk if we try to solve these pension funding issues on the backs of teachers. You know, these are real people with real families who have dedicated their lives to Vermont's children and youth. And even through this wretched pandemic, our educators have kept their promise to their students. And we know Vermont wants to keep its promise to our teachers. But to say that there wouldn't be consequences, I think, would be a real mistake. There will be consequences, and we've seen that already because so many of our teachers feel disrespected through this process. And that's why we're really very pleased that the legislature has put the brakes on here, and we're going to take a much more strategic path to find some solutions.
State Treasurer Pierce, Don Tenney talked about other revenue sources, and he suggested a higher income, higher taxes on people who have higher incomes. What are your thoughts about dedicating a revenue source in the future to help alleviate some of this unfunded liability?
Well, I think those are two different questions. First, when you talk about tax reform, I'm an advocate of comprehensive tax reform. You know, we had many years ago a blue ribbon task force, and pretty much that recommendations on that were put on the shelf. I know there's been some efforts recently. I think that the legislature has to take up that issue, not just one segment, but a comprehensive look at that. The other thing, issue is a dedicated revenue source. And if you look at my report, we did recommend that we take a look at this and allocate dollars that are available. Talked a little bit about the COVID CARES Act and the opportunity there. I'm hearing that some of those opportunities may not exist based on the restrictions that are putting up, that it will be put on those dollars. But we did talk about the need for looking at revenue, but you also have to take a look at the structural issue. If demographics are pushing the numbers up, which they are, if retirement experience is pushing up the numbers, or actions such as retirement incentives that were offered, not just at the state level, but what I've seen is anecdotal evidence that that's occurred, at least in the recent past, in various schools. The reorganization of schools, the concerns on property tax, and I'm not taking a position on property tax, but when you press the balloon on one side, it pops out on the other side. And I think as we look at these issues, we should look at the whole cost, not just one sector of it, but the entire cost, including the cost in terms of turnover and staff and the cost to students. So for me, it's a very I'm all in on taking a look at revenue, but we also need to be careful and take a look at the demographics. And getting to the point that this is going to change benefit structures and benefits, that's why it's painful. But I'm looking at the long term. What does it do for the next generation of teachers and the next generation after that? Now, sometimes we have a tendency to look at just the present. With all due respect, mm-hmm. I think Representative Sarah is doing her job in being responsible. I think that I've seen that in many of the recent legislators in legislative sessions. But we tend to think about these things in the short term. You know, how is it going to affect this year's budget? We need to have a long-term look at these and policy decisions so that we
take care of the next generation of children, the next generation of citizens in this state, and the next generation of all people that reside in Vermont.
Representative Copeland Hanzus, you hinted at the task force might look at other revenue sources.
Yep, that is one of the directives that we have put in the duties of the task force is to consider whether revenue should be on the table in terms of helping to fix the problem. And, you know, while I completely agree that we should look at all options, as Treasurer Pierce just said, I think it's important for Vermonters to understand the scope and magnitude of the problem that we're trying to fix relative to a surcharge on the highest income Vermonters. The state's bill for the pension system this year, just on the pension side, was $315 million. And that increased from last year by $96 million. So that's nearly $100 million increase over the past year. When we look at predicting how much revenue we might get from a surcharge on the wealthiest Vermonters, that's looking at $30 to $40 million a year. So it wouldn't even cover the amount that our payment grew over the last year. And so it is not the magic solution to the problem. But I agree, it should be on the table for us to consider as part of some other structural changes that we need to look at making. We want this pension benefit to be in place for the future workers as well. And so that's why we have to have this comprehensive conversation.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bill, who is calling from Salisbury. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
What's on your mind today?
My question is, would there be a way of separating this from state workers and teachers who typically get much, much less, some say like 35% less for their pay? Because I feel like we are utilizing the public support for teachers to sort of ignore the very large section of that, which is the rest of the state workers, whose pay is considerably more. And I actually heard on the show a couple months back that the average pay for a teacher or for state workers is $20,000 a year. I haven't been able to find anything that actually validates that.
Okay. Representative Copeland Hanzus, is there a way to separate these funds as Bill is suggesting?
So I think I'm not quite clear what separation means in this context to Bill. I would say, just to help him pin down the $20,000 number that he heard, I believe that is the pension income, the average pension income. So that's not what current teachers or state employees are making. That is what the average of current retirees is, and Treasurer Pierce could certainly confirm that for us.
That is correct. It's about $20,000 for the average state employee. The salary is obviously larger than that. What is done is in calculating the benefit is to use an individual's salary times the years of service and then an increment of what that benefit might be. So for a number of employees,
okay,
it might be 0.167 or something along that line.
Right now, Steve Howard of the VSEA is going to join us. Rather, Steve, sorry that this has to be such a brief conversation. We'll be returning to this issue in the future. Steve, what do you want folks to know about how these pension changes could affect state employees?
Well, thank you, Bob. I think it's really important to know that pensions are a major source of retention and recruitment for state government, and we have a hard time filling many of our state positions. Our pension benefit is 7% less than the national benefit. And so if we attack pensions and we tax the dietary aide making $12 an hour at the vet's home, but we don't ask the wealthiest amongst us making $500,000 or more to pay even 1 cent more. We are really going to hurt our ability to provide services. And in this COVID outbreak, where state employees have led the state out of this pandemic, you can see how valuable it is to have those positions filled. So we haven't asked the wealthiest people to pay more in 30 years. We're asking our legislative leaders to have the courage to stand with us in that fight. Stand with the dietary aid and take on the battle to ask the wealthiest amongst us to pay their fair share. It can make a tremendous difference in this when you put $80 to $90 million into the pension fund and invest it in compounds year over year. So it's not as simple as saying, well, it just doesn't make up the difference. That money would be invested and would grow. So we got to put the mm-hmm. we got to put the workers first, and we got to ask the wealthiest people who haven't been asked to pay more in 30 years to pay their fair share.
Well, this certainly is going to be an issue we're going to revisit many times in the future. Many thanks to all our guests today, Steve Howard of the VSEA, Don Tinney of Vermont NEA, Bradford Representative Sarah Copla-Hensis, and also State Treasurer Beth Pierce. Thank you all very much for being part of this program.